Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I am riding a buzz of excitement, for Season 11 has finally been announced. The X-Files is officially coming back next year, more than likely next year. And this is the first time I've been able to address it on the podcast for this very special episode, where I have a very special guest. And this is someone unrelated to Season 11 in a way, but also very related to a certain Season 11. I've been looking forward to setting up this interview for quite a while. And this week, I have on the show none other than Joe Harris, writer of the X-Files comic series from IDW Publishing that has been ongoing since 2013. Joe was responsible for the Season 10, Season 11 comics and the continuation comics from IDW that have been running since last year, since the event series. And he's now involved in bringing the Cold Cases audio project to life, which got fans into a real excitement frenzy a couple of weeks ago when it was suddenly announced from Audible. And that was, of course, before Season 11 was announced. So it's been quite a few weeks for X-Files fandom. And we'll be covering all of this in due course. But in this episode, we focus on our conversation with Joe, in which we talk about the comics, about Cold Cases, and about his X-Files fandom in general. So let's not beat about the bush and get straight into this, the X-Cast interview with Joe Harris. So I'm here with Joe Harris, writer of the X-Files Season 10 and continuation comics, and of the upcoming Audible drama Cold Cases as well. Thank you so much for coming on the X-Cast, Joe. It's really great to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I always start people off on the X-Cast with what I call the five questions of X, which is our icebreaker questions to get a little bit into your X-Files fandom. And seldom have we had someone on the X-Cast who knows the X-Files better than you do, as you've been proven by the comics. I'm going to start you off with these anyway. So my first question is simply, when did you first discover the X-Files?
Oh, wow. I guess I first discovered them when the show debuted back in the early 90s. I'm pretty sure I watched the pilot air for the first time. I was a teenager, and Fox was the new thing after we'd grown up in the States, pretty much with three networks plus public television. Suddenly, Fox was the brand new place to watch TV, and there was all sorts of weird programming coming on, things like Herman's Head and that show that Tia Leone, David Duchovny's eventual wife, was on, Flying Blind, I think the title of it was. And there was all this new programming, and suddenly there was this creepy looking thing hitting commercials for the X-Files, and it was hard not to get sucked in. My friends were very excited about it. I think they took to it a little faster than I did. But yeah, I mean, I've been more or less on board since the beginning. I'm sure my involvement, not my involvement's the wrong way to put it, but my fandom has ebbed and waned over the, you know, ebbed and surged, I guess, over the years, like I think a lot of people's when you've got this enduring franchise. But it's really been a part of my life for going on 25 years now, just like so many of us.
Yeah, it's always good when that happens, when you can find something quite early on and stick with it. And obviously the X-Files has been around so long, and you've played such a big part in it towards the, you know, its later years. So it's great. What would you say then your favorite episode is of the show? I'm guessing you stick watching it all the way through, even into the later years and things like that.
I think I started to lose a little interest toward the end, initially, like a lot of people around me seem to. I'm not sure. I don't remember if I saw every episode in those final couple of seasons, first run or not, but I did come back for The Truth, the two-parter at the end, which was a bit of an emotional experience just to sort of see it wrap up like this. Obviously, I was on pins and needles. Next week couldn't come fast enough during the entire build-up through Season 4 and then into Season 5, leading to the movie and the resolution of Scully's illness and everything. But I mean, for the most part, I think I was there first run straight through. I watched Millennium when it debuted. I think I saw the movie when it opening weekend. It's just a modern classic in my childhood, whereas the earlier science fiction, horror, thriller franchises from my childhood were very much something that happened when I was very young, like Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark and so many other things. The X-Files was this new, almost instantly enduring classic that came about when I was a fairly realized person in his mid to late teenage years. So it is very much of a certain period in my life that I'm rather fond to look back on. Not that it was perfect or always wonderful, but it was usually colorful. that's how I would describe the 90s.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I was a teenager in the 90s myself. Yeah, it's true. Would you say you had a favorite episode then overall of the show based on those years?
I've had a few favorites over the years. I think the instant classic for myself and my friends was The Host, which I think wasn't it the second episode of season two, the first and only appearance of Fluke Man, the Fluke Creature. It was just one of those things. It looked so great. The makeup, the costume was so perfect that it really left this indelible mark on us. And I can't really, I mean, it's a really good episode. It's one of my favorite monster episodes. I think there's some great character stuff in it. You've got Mulder and Scully dealing with recently having the X-Files close down at the end of the first season. So they're sort of meeting in private and secret so as not to arouse the suspicions of the FBI elders. You've got some great character stuff in that there's a moment where toward the end of the episode where the Fluke Creature drags a sewer worker into the water. And Mulder doesn't even think about it. He just jumps right into that sewage treatment water to save him. And I thought, and I think looking back on it, because I've watched that episode a number of times in recent years, because we did a sequel to it early on in the X-Files season 10 comic series. That moment is so quintessentially Mulder to me, just duty first, inherently heroic without really having to contemplate, do I really want to jump in that filthy water and face this disgusting thing? And, you know, like I said, it's a great creature. I think for me also, one of my favorite episodes I would offer in terms of mythology, which I've always been partial to just because I think the mythology as builds through those first 4 to 5 seasons is among the greatest contributions we'll probably ever see in genre fiction. And I think one of my favorite episodes, I don't even know if it's the most consequential one, but the season, I think it's the season 3 finale, is it? Talitha Kumi that Chris Carter wrote, right? You know, we saw so infrequently the larger concepts realized on the screen. I mean, very fleetingly, we would see things like alien spacecraft and hints of the gray aliens and such. But the human stakes as wrapped around these really colorful characters who were purposefully ambiguous, like the syndicate members and such, it was just so strong. And as that season 3 ends, I'm just on the edge of the sofa watching the television still, because it just makes me want to immediately jump to season 4.
Yeah, it's funny because there's quite a few people who don't seem to enjoy Talitha Kumi, and I don't understand why. I think that's a tremendous finale. I agree with you there. I think there's so much mythology and myth arc and, you know, symbolism and all kinds of things in it. I think it's really, really good. So it's nice to hear that mentioned as a favorite episode, because we don't get that very often when I ask this question.
I'm so attached to it from however many years it's been now, because it's got so many great characters coming back in it. I mean, Deep Throat is in it, and I think Bill Mulder is in it, and obviously Stephen Williams' X is in there.
Well, you've mentioned two episodes in seasons 2 and 3 specifically. Would you say that either of those are your favorite season, or do you have another potential favorite season out there?
Maybe season 4, just because I think it was cooking on all levels, the show at that point. I mean, you've got Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man, and The Lone Gunmen are so realized in that season. Every episode felt like, though I was waiting for more mythology while I was watching it, you were just hit with so many great standalone episodes as well. So I guess I would say season 4. Just, I mean, Home. I mean, I can't believe I can talk about this season and not even get to the Peacock family, which is like probably where most people would rightly go first. So, I mean, Tunguska and you know, the two-parter with Krycek and Russia, I love, and Paper Hearts, and Tempest Fugit when you get back into the myth arc, and you know, all the way to Small Potatoes, and it's just such a great season.
Yeah, there's a lot in it, isn't there? There's a lot of really, really standout episodes. And I think we tend to get seasons 3 or 4 quite often named as the show at its best. So I completely understand why you go there, really, with season 4. It was consistently good, I think, by that point. What about favourite character, then? Is there anyone that leaps out at you? And obviously, you know, you've written a lot of them now during the comics. And this doesn't have to be Mulder or Scully. So is there anyone you love more than anyone else?
Oh, the cigarette-smoking man. Without, yeah. I don't mean to elevate him above anybody else, because I love Walter Skinner, and I adore Krychek, and I have a lot of feelings for a lot of these characters, both consequential and only partially realized. You know, some of the members of the syndicate we don't really know that much about, but we would learn some really tantalizing things about every now and again, from the well-manicured man to the elders on down. But yeah, the cigarette smoking man. What an incredible addition to genre fiction that character is. William B. Davis turns in one of the most indelible performances over a span of so many episodes, over so many years. Almost from the beginning, when, you know, if you read the liner notes and interviews with Chris Carter at the time, he was sort of a background character smoking in the back of Skinner's office while they talk to Agent Scully for the first time. Not Skinner's office, but
Blevins.
Blevins. thank you. I've just disappointed thousands of your listeners by leaving out the L in his name.
You failed the test, Joe.
right. Next. But he's such a just iconic to the nth degree, and it seemed like every time they ever did something with the character that told you something. I mean, I didn't even like when we learned his name. However, I loved the whole relationship with his son, how he shot him in the face and all of this stuff. So this character as sort of like a second father that looks after Mulder from the beginning while doing everything he can to throw them off the crusade that Mulder brings Scully along on in those early years is just wonderful. Musings of a cigarette smoking man, even if it's not the 100% verifiable truth, it still speaks to amazing aspects of the character that make him complex and fascinating, from the fact that he, you know, following through on that almost throwaway line early on when he tells him, you know, I've watched presidents die, and we see him depicted as actually committing the John F. Kennedy assassination, to this really fascinating rationale for volunteering to assassinate the Reverend Martin Luther King. Though he admired him greatly, he saw him as a threat to the American war effort against communism, which was just a fascinating, evolved and horrible rationale for partaking in something like that just fit the character and made him something more than a two-dimensional mustache twirling bad guy just blowing smoke around and looking menacing. And I just think I cannot, if there's one character I like writing more than anyone else, it's the cigarette smoking man. That's my short answer to a very long-winded intro.
No, I completely understand that. I completely understand. He is such a great character, and he must have been a real thrill to actually write a sequel to The Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man in the comics, which I know you did, which was a really, really interesting a way of doing that again in many respects and doing new things with it. That must have been fun.
Yeah, it was a bit of an homage, I guess. It was something I really love, being able to go and do flashback stories that pay tribute to what we know per these hallowed episodes of the show, while filling in some blanks and maybe hopefully offering something that doesn't contradict anything but illuminate something new. That's always the goal. And I love doing that, and we just did it in the current series of the X-Files comics. We took Bill Mulder and the Smoking Man down to Nicaragua for a story set during the days of the Iran-Contra scandal here in the States. And that was a thrill. We even included President Ronald Reagan in there, which was also a fascinating cameo.
that was great to see the Smoking Man just in the White House, you know, yeah, in the Oval Office, just telling Reagan what to do and what was going on. It was great.
When I wrote that scene, I emailed my editor Denton and I said, I really want to pitch this team up book. And he laughed. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's, I have more Smoking Man, Ronald Reagan team up stories I would love to do.
that's great. That's really good. Finally, then, for the five questions of X, what would you say, if you had to pick, what would you say your favorite moment from the X-Files is? Is there a specific scene or line or anything that leaps out at you as just being your favorite moment?
Oh, wow. My favorite moment. Just in terms of, you know, the hair on the back of my neck standing up, when Krychek comes out of the bathroom and reveals the black oil in the whites of his eyes. I mean, that's a wonderful moment. I'm trying to think I can give you some of the standard ones I think people might talk about. Scully singing Joy to the World, the Three Dog Night song to Mulder, or, you know, Mulder teaching her how to swing a baseball bat in The Unnatural. That's pretty wonderful. So many moments in which Mulder feels responsible for what happens to Scully as the result of his bringing her into this conspiracy that he, for all his passion, could never have conceived was as vast or as nefariously resourced as it proves to be. And when she's abducted, it's strong stuff. I think I love when Mulder is sent in the hostage negotiations with Duane Barry. I think that's some really strong stuff, just because he believes him, you know, and that two-parter was a very influential two-parter for me because it really sets a template in which part one of an overall story is very, very different from part two. And you can kind of tell one kind of story to its supposed resolution and then flip everything on its end. And suddenly part two is all about Scully in the trunk of this guy's car being brought to the mountain to, you know, confront the spaceship. And So it's Mulder's feeling responsible for Scully that I love. I enjoy Scully's relationship with her family, being visited by her father after the Christmas party where she knows something's not right because he's sort of just muttering and sitting in the chair when she just left the house and knows logically that can't really be him. And it turns out she may have been visited by his spirit after his death. Little things like that really illuminate who these characters are really stay with you and they stay with me.
Yeah, some amazing moments mentioned there. And it is a difficult question to answer because it is just full of great scenes, great moments, great lines. So, yeah, you captured a few good ones there, Joe. I completely agree with you. So, yeah, that's the five questions of X, which gives us a really great scope of your X-Files fandom and everything like that. So that's brilliant. So let's talk a little bit about your contribution then to this great show. It all begins with the beginning of season 10, the continuation at that point, comics, in 2013. Let's talk a little bit about how that came to be in the first place, because obviously Chris Carter was quite involved, wasn't he, at the beginning? And it's a really interesting story how it all came about, isn't it?
It is. From the best of my recall, and my memory is always is somewhat sketchy sometimes, but as I recall it, I guess it was 2013, and IDW had acquired the license to do X-Files comics. It was the 20th anniversary of the show, and fans were demonstrably hungry for X-Files, and there hadn't been anything for a while. And I forgot how it came about, but I had basically been talking with editor-in-chief of IDW, Chris Ryle, about what it is I might do at IDW. And he asked me if I was a fan of the X-Files. They had gotten the license, and they hadn't really hit upon a direction to take it in. Are you interested? And I said, yes. And I immediately went home and I wrote up this very, very long outline for how I envisioned bringing back Mulder and Scully after all these years away. A lot of this original pass would evolve into what we did in the very first five-part arc we did with artist Michael Walsh and Jordy Belair, who's been with us from the beginning, Believers. And Chris and IDW really liked it. They said, okay, this is what we want to do. They showed it to the representatives at Fox and the licensing department, who I was told really, really responded to what I wanted to do with the material. Everyone was in agreement, this is the way to go. There was still no Chris Carter as a force, as a presence, had not yet materialized when, if I remember correctly, Chris Ryle had gone into a meeting at Fox in Los Angeles and to discuss the franchise as we were getting ready to begin production on the first issue. And he walked into a meeting and Chris Carter was there. And it was sort of, as I understand it, it wasn't he didn't know he was walking into that first meeting. And Chris Carter asked him, so tell me, what do you guys want to do with the X-Files? He had not been involved to that point. And out of that meeting, we then had a conference call with, Chris, myself, Chris Ryle, and Denton, the editor, series editor at IDW. And it was, it was okay. It was constructive. He was very – Chris Carter was kind of guarded and a little – he didn't know me. He didn't know what to trust from this process. And, we were sort of looking at one another wondering, is this going to make this harder if he likes or – like if he doesn't like what we're telling him, is that going to make it harder to get going on this series, which we had already begun working on? But things sort of moved very fast. We announced the series at Emerald City Comic Con that year. And the week after that, I was in L.A. and we had a meeting down at the 1013 offices in Santa Monica. And Chris had me up to the offices, and he, imparted some knowledge and as well as some secrets about the X-Files to me, and as well as voiced his support. He tweaked a couple of the things I wanted to do from the beginning in ways that I am confident were for the better, in terms of just steering me away from one path I wanted to go down with the mythology toward something else that really blossomed into the mystery of who the big bad would turn out to be at the end of the season 10 series. And that's really how we came about. And, then as we got closer, as the spring turned to summer, at San Diego, at Comic-Con that July, there was both the TV Guide orchestrated big reunion panel with the entire cast and a bunch of the writers, as well as Chris. And then the day after that, we had our own comics panel with myself, as well as Chris Carter and Gillian Anderson on the same panel with me. And Dean Hagland was the moderator. And we had a room full of people who were so excited to start reading these comics. And it was really one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had in this industry.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Being on a panel with all those X-Files legends and actually being part of that.
Yeah, and being sort of there at the moment when it sort of hits the zeitgeist again, it was coming to Netflix, and I started to meet all these young people who I can't believe they were even alive when the show was. I mean, seriously, this happens to me all the time. People who have an encyclopedic knowledge of the X-Files and have, they can discuss it backwards and forward like they grew up with it, and they're, maybe half my age. And It's rather fascinating. So, it was definitely a good time to be involved with the X-Files, that's for sure.
Coming up with the season as a whole, you chose some really interesting stories that mixed a lot of familiar characters with new ideas, like Chitta is a good example of a solo standalone story. So was it really interesting to try and get that balance of putting your own stamp on the X-Files and coming up with your own monsters and things like that and calling back to some of these great characters and these great storylines?
Yeah, it was a learning experience. My first instinct when pitching to take over this series was to find a way to do enough of the, for lack of a better word, retro stuff to make the old-time folks happy, to see those familiar characters, people that essentially died at the end of the series. I mean, as far as anyone was concerned, Smoking Man was blown up when the black helicopters attacked the cave he was sitting in. Immediately trying to find a creative way to bring these characters back that wasn't contrived in the sense of, you know, the worst kind of comic book cliches, in which people would come back from the dead in the pages of Marvel Comics all the time when I was growing up reading comics. And I wanted these sort of these reunions and, you know, for lack of a better word, resurrections to have consequence and to have consequences and to resonate. And we made the cigarette smoking man's return a mystery. And we immediately introduced him as living, breathing, walking, smoking, all of that in his classic look and feel, you know, without the long hair and not smoking a cigarette through his trachea hole, let alone not blown up and incinerated in rocket fire. And but making it a mystery where there's something flawed about him and he's clearly not who he portrays himself as. And that sort of bore fruit in the mythology arcs that we would do in that first series as we introduced our master menace and villain. And I don't want to give anything away if people don't, I don't know how much people know or don't, so I don't want to spoil that first series, but I one of the things I'm most proud of that we managed to do is to carve out this little tiny corner of the mythology and add something interesting to it in a time in which the X-Files hasn't been relevant, in which, you know, all of this, if there was ever a need for the X-Files division to exist, it wasn't being met. And we wanted to make that part of the overarching thing going into the series. And that's, you know, that was just how we did this from the beginning.
Yeah, and it was done very well. You know, season 10 and season 11, obviously, really did etch its own, as you say, its own niche, its own corner into this universe, and without giving anything away. Season 11, obviously, was cut short than the original plan, when, obviously, the season 10, or the event series of The X-Files, was announced. And without going into any spoiler details, can you tell us anything about the reason behind that and what potentially your plan would have been for a full 20-25 episode season of season 11?
Yeah, I mean, in broad strokes, again, I don't want to reveal who the villain is in season 10 and 11, just because I think it's, I've never gotten so much kind email as I did the day that issue came out that revealed who the glasses wearing man, which I think I can reveal. That's the early on moniker for this mystery character who has resurrected the syndicate inexplicably in the pages of the X-Files comics. And toward we reveal who he actually is toward the end of that first 25 issue series. And I got so much really great feedback for how we orchestrated that. And I was really pleased with how we did it. And from there, season 11 was very much to be a lot more of what we ended up doing. And what was it? I think it was 8 issues. Is that all we really got to do in season 11? I don't even remember. I think it was 6 or 8 issues total.
Yeah, I think it was around that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be 25, the same as the first series. And long story short, what it would have been a lot of would have been, I mean, we did a sequel to Home as well, which was, you know, I think necessarily titled, but a little unfortunately titled Home Again, because just as we were getting ready to announce that, it came out that was going to be one of the titles in the returning show's short run. Although that had nothing to do with the Peacock family. It had nothing to do with that original episode, whereas Home Again in the comics was a 3-part arc that very much was a sequel to the Peacock saga. And what we would have done more of is show our master villain, our big bad, essentially mining unresolved things from the X-Files canon in an effort to beat Mulder at this. Like, it was almost this obsession to really solve these things first and for all, once and for all, and achieve something that Mulder had not. While Mulder in season 11 is on the run from the government in a way that we really didn't get to see when he was on the wrong side of the federal government at the end of the show. He was living, he was in disguise sometimes, and he was on the run. He had the lone gunman on the run with him as well sometimes, so they would get to hook up out there on the road to commiserate over something. So anyway, there were other stories I wanted to tackle, other things I wanted to bring back from the canon that we had to cut short, and we had to really speed up our plans to resolve this and get to what would have been, I think, a better orchestrated finale had I been able to take the glasses wearing man through a few more paces that I had wanted to and wasn't able to. So it was a little bit of a disappointment in that regard. Although I think we still pulled off a pretty good final arc together with sort of Mulder and the glasses wearing man involved in this final sort of hellscape where Washington D.C. is in ruins and Mulder's coming to face him for the final time, and how that resonates sort of through everything we had done and what it means. Hopefully it came off as something of a commentary, if not a love letter, to the franchise and its various forms. But yeah, ultimately, I mean, nothing was ever as satisfying to me as that original series, just because we always had a perfect grasp of where we were going with it. There were plenty of things where we were dealt a decision or something, you know, made it necessary for us to take a particular direction that we had to, you know, tap dance very fast and figure out what we were going to do. And the entirety of the vision that we were trying to affect came together over time as we were learning how to do this. But 1 through 25, I am very pleased with what we pulled off in a mythology sense. Whereas in season 11, I think it was cut short a little too much for me to be totally satisfied, while still, you know, understanding that this is the nature of the game sometimes when you're dealing with a high profile license like the X-Files that is sort of at the whim of what the license holder Fox wants to do with it. And when the show is announced to come back to television, the comics politely step aside from the stage because many, many millions more people want to watch a television show. And so you just kind of roll with it. But it was a good run before we were interfered with. And you know, I wish some things would have been different, but I have no real complaints. It's all been so positive. It's kind of hard to complain about much.
Would you ever, if you had the chance, would you ever go back to writing into that sort of version of the X-Files universe? Maybe more short stories like you did for the Secret Agendas anthology, like Thanks and Praise, things like that.
If there was a market for it and IDW wanted to do that, I would be amenable to that, certainly. I mean, it was fun. I don't know if there is or isn't, but sure. I love the idea of being able to visit some of those concepts. This idea of this resurrected syndicate that is not quite what it seems is something I'm really fond of. I would love to do more with that. You know,
yeah, well, who knows? Maybe that day will come, definitely. Of course, this universe of the X-Files isn't quite finished in a sense because of Cold Cases, which last week, I think, as we record, surprised everybody in the X-Files fan world, completely coming out of nowhere, that there's a new audiobook from Audible with David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson reprising their roles. And it's based on Believers, I believe.
It's based on the entire season 10 run, actually. The entire 25 issues have been, well, they're in the process of being edited and mixed now, but everything's been recorded. All of the stories in season 10 are part of this, and I believe it's going to be released in two chunks. One, the first in July, and then I guess the second parcel of stories will come out sometime later this year. I don't have firm dates on that, but I think that's what I was told. And it is. I've heard Believers, by the way. I've heard a rough mix of Believers, which is stunning because it's an audio experience, you know, you know how Audible works. So it's sort of like, it's not just a reading of the text like you would in a normal audio book, because if you just read the text in the comics, you won't have any idea in some cases what you're supposed to be looking at. So Dirk Maggs, who is, I think, the guy who at this point is the go-to person for doing this. I know he's adapted Neil Gaiman's stuff for Audible, as well as the Dirk Gently series. And everyone who complimented me on X-Files Cold Cases getting announced immediately told me what a tremendous fan they are of Dirk Maggs's work. So he's taken these books from, he's taken actually from my comic scripts. He's crafted an audio experience for these stories in which there are some additions to sort of that he's added to sort of set the scene and paint a picture and add what is necessary to an audio experience like the sort that the X-Files Cold Cases is presenting. But it's, let me tell you, to hear Gillian Anderson, David Duchovny, Mitch Pileggi, William B. Davis, on and on and on, reading my dialogue is, I had to sit down. Because I've heard Believers from front to back. It's a rough mix. It's not final, but oh my God, stunning. I mean, I never imagined this is where we were going. And I first heard that Audible was interested. I was first told that they were interested in this, and I heard a really, really rough sort of a demo for the opening scene of Believers, where Scully, who is still living still living under an assumed identity, as we introduce them in the comics, Mrs. Blake, because she's Mulder is going by the alternate ego of Anthony Blake, who, you know, Bill Bixby's character from The Magician, which was Mulder's favorite show when he was a boy. She's being stalked by the villains known as the Acolytes, who we introduce in the pages of Believers. And I heard this audio demo of that using not even actors. I'm sure they were just people who worked at the studio putting this together. And I was first told that they were trying to get this set up about two or three years ago. And it's and then it sort of nothing happened. And then all of a sudden, it became time to get into production on this, and it's been a lot to sit on, to not sort of, just not to be celebratory and looking to spread the news all over the place. So when the news finally did break, it was, I was sort of like, just finally, you know, cause I've been sitting on this for so long.
Oh yeah. Cause it was last autumn, wasn't it? Or around that time that these were recorded. So it's been a while, hasn't it, since this was all done effectively, and you've been holding on to it.
Yeah, and I was told, I found out a couple of months, not even, I found out last month actually, that it was going to be out in July, and that one of the producers came to see me at Emerald City Comic Con to give me sort of an update, because IDW doesn't even, they didn't even know what was going on with this. This is very much on Audible's end at this point, and I didn't even realize the news was going to break the morning it came out, and suddenly my timelines and social media were just flooded with people who were putting two and two together and realizing these were based on the comics.
Well, I think one of the big questions that has been going around everywhere since this came out, one of the big questions has been going around everyone is that the blurb for Cold Cases describes it as sort of filling in the blanks between I Want to Believe and the beginning of season 10 of the event series. And I think what everyone's been wondering is, how direct an adaptation of your comics is this? Because your season 10 is obviously markedly different from the TV series to season 10. So I think there's a lot of interest and a lot of fascination about how, if this is in what is termed canon and it's bridging, how it's actually going to work and how direct it is. And I think that's a fascinating thing people have been wondering.
I wonder the same thing. I don't want to pour cold water on anyone's expectations. Because the truth be told, I have not heard beyond Believers, but Believers is a pretty straight adaptation, and I think there are some elements in there that would seem to not be entirely compatible with where the show picks up in the recent six episode run that debuted last winter. So I wasn't involved in the production, and I don't know how much of that is marketing speak and how much of that is to be taken literally. So I'm just going to sort of demur from that question a little bit and say I'm not entirely sure how to answer it.
I think ultimately fans won't mind. You know, I think ultimately it's the fact we're getting more adventures of Mulder and Scully based on these great comic stories, which everyone seems to have enjoyed. I think ultimately it won't bother a great many people. Certainly doesn't bother me. I'm just happy we get Mulder and Scully back and all these characters. So I think adapting them is a bit of a stroke of genius, actually, to take these really good scripts and actually make them into an audio experience. And I think so many people are excited about it.
It's very validating in a way I never anticipated. I never imagined that, you know, I've never had any illusions about this either. I mean, on its best day, the comics service a tiny, tiny fraction of the fandom that enjoys the X-Files overall. I mean, it's just the reality. I mean, you reach however many thousands of people a month, whereas the show on its worst day is servicing tens of millions all over the place. And so you've got to keep things in something of a perspective. But the idea that we would be further enshrined this way with the original cast reprising their roles is so much more than I ever imagined would have come of this.
No, it's fantastic. It's really exciting. I think, like I say, everyone was like, what? It was a huge shock, and I think a really pleasant surprise, actually. So switching to the comics again, have you enjoyed writing within the season 10 event series universe? And how much of a different challenge has that been since you switched gears for that?
I have enjoyed it, just objectively. It's been a little different in that the mindset needs to change a little bit. Suddenly we were following what we just saw on television. The characters look like they did. They carry around a certain weight of their experience, both longstanding and recent, that resonates a bit more, I hope, in the most recent comics, as reflected from that show, from the television season 10 that came back last winter. We got to focus. It's been a little bit of a challenge, just again, abruptly winding down season 11 and then getting this new series up and running. There have been hiccups and challenges, but in a sense, some of the moments between Mulder and Scully feel even more stripped down and honest and current than what we had been doing. There are no resurrected characters kind of parading around like candy. There's just Mulder and Scully as we know them and saw them recently, with all of their experiences, the differences between them, the challenges they face. It's been a bit of a mature experience in a way. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I feel like I'm dealing with more mature people and characters, and that's not just because they're, you know, in their 50s now. There is a difference. It did feel different, but I took to it as best I could, and I can't say I regret any of it. I think I've enjoyed all of it. There are some stretches that we've gotten to do in all of these series that I think I like more than others, but this has been fun, and in that respect, the direction we've gone in isn't regretted.
I think what I've been impressed by is that you have taken risks. I mean, in this continuation of the event series, there's been pieces like Ishmael, which really got into the idea of William Scully, and that there were elements about his past we didn't know. And then most recently, has been running the, obviously you mentioned Contrarians earlier as well, but also Skinner, which was the two-part look at, which is still ongoing, of Skinner's experiences in Vietnam. All things that have been mentioned in the show or alluded to, but you've been able to get under the skin of. And I think it's been really nice to see those risks taken, and that you haven't had to necessarily focus on a traditional Mulder and Scully story every week. That must have been exciting to do.
Yeah, sure. I've wanted to do a Skinner standalone story for a while. So that was something I'd wanted to do for years, actually. And the William Scully Ishmael story was something that just sort of came up in the brainstorming for what it is we were hoping to pull off with this new season going forward, and some of the paces we wanted to put Scully through leading toward what hopefully is a good realized finale, you know. So and all of the things, I'm always of the mind that if I can find a way for lack of another way to describe them, the monster episodes, which aren't always about monsters, but that's kind of just the generic way we'll describe something that isn't mythology based, I think. Like, I always want that to somehow resonate later in the myth arc. And sometimes we're not able to pull that off, but I'm always wondering, like, is there a way to, I can't even articulate how it is I'm thinking, but I'm just trying to put the character through something that when we reach the climax that, you know, hopefully seals the thesis that is this season or this run of the comics, it mattered, you know. And that's always what I'm thinking. Whether or not we achieve that is, you know, debatable, and I would probably debate one way or the other on a few points myself, but that's always what we're hoping to do.
Yeah, and it does pay off. You know, you do get that sense of a continuing, you know, characterization, even separate from the actual show, and being able to do that. Of course, the run is coming to an end with the 17th issue, Resistance, in September, which is part of the end of a 4-part arc, which closes out this run. Is this it, Joe? Is this the end of the X-Files continuation comics, or is it just the end for now, or are you carrying on with them?
I don't know what the future plans are, I'll be honest with you, but yes, my this is the first time I'm actually saying it out loud, but yes, issue 17 is the finale of this run. It is my final issue writing the X-Files. We've talked about my maybe returning to do something else in the future, which I'm more than open to, because I love this franchise, and I enjoy the publisher, and I love working on, you know, I have no issues with anyone involved at all. So I would like to continue in some capacity. But yes, the final 4-part arc is going to be the final story. And hopefully we can pull it off. I wish we had gotten to do this in 25 issues, because we there are some things mythology-wise that I could always use more time and more space to sort of get on its feet and try out and realize through a series of orchestrated, hopefully for the better, twists and turns that illuminate these new characters and such. But it will be the final arc. I think it is a very timely episode. It is a very timely story. It's called Resistance. It runs from issue 14 through 17, and it is reflective of the current political situation we are dealing with here in the United States. It brings back a character we introduced in the Came Back Haunted arc, Firas Ben Brahim, who is a very wealthy industrialist and philanthropist with more than one skeleton in his closet, and you're going to find out what those are going forward. And it all ties into this overarching concern involving a government, a White House, an administration, a new president who is compromised not only by he's not only compromised by rash, unhinged behavior, but by what appear to be alien possessed figures in his administration. And it ties into some of what we have already seen in that other mythology 4-part arc we did in this series, Came Back Haunted, which I think ran from issue 6 through 9, involving, you know, something something related to a certain oily substance that may or may not be purity based, and sort of taking these classic ideas and infusing them into this current worldview and outlook that we're sort of living in. And what I've tried to do with this final arc is make the X-Files relevant for 2017, 2018. I think that I remember when I first met with Chris Carter, he told me that as they were winding down the show, he felt like in the aftermath of September 11th, there was this want to trust the government in a way that the X-Files at its core was not resonant. And I got what he was saying, even though I think we probably could have used a little more skepticism back in the early days of 2000, 2001. Nowadays, I don't think you get any of that when we're looking at what is questionable, offensive, concerning, disturbing about American politics. And then, you know, you can blow that up and look around the world and sort of see a lot of political turmoil that is not that makes you a little concerned to watch, be it the way elections and vote referendums are going, to the way forces are reacting to things like refugee crises and the idea that people are getting displaced and ending up in other places, and what are the politics surrounding that? What are the policies surrounding that? And anyway, to kind of sum this up I'm trying to be diplomatic and not be too scathing in how I talk about this, but I very much wanted to do an X-Files story, set for the age of Donald Trump. And, I'm very pleased with what Resistance is turning into. I literally have one more script left to write, which I'm circling and trying to figure out how best to get into it. It's a little bit of having a little bit of a block, just sort of getting started on what might be my final X-Files story. But I can tell you that it does feel, it's very me, it's very much of my worldview. And I think that in this very, very strange new present, let alone future we're living in, there is absolutely a place for the X-Files, and I'm trying to indicate where it is I see it being, and that's what Resistance is all about. And the only problem is reality is sort of outpacing what it is we're doing in the book, and I find myself rewriting things because every day I wake up and I don't know what the crisis of the day is really going to be. And every time I think I have a bead on where events are pushing us and where politics and the news of the day are going, it's like I have to go back and start over and kind of think 2-3 steps ahead and hope, you know, some of the craziness doesn't outpace me. But but so far, so good.
It's an apt title if you're doing a commentary on the Trump administration, Resistance. And I say that as somebody who isn't an American, but certainly he's from a country who, on the whole, certainly I think would agree with your stance on things, Joe. So
I get that impression, even though you're, yes, even though you're Brexiting. I don't...
That's not many of us.
I know. I get that impression too. I'm sorry.
Me too. But we're in similar situations to an extent as nations, in that we're very divided, and there are a great many of us who are very, very upset at how things are going. But that's why the X-Files is more needed than ever, I think, because it does allow writers like yourself to shine a light on the kind of things that were being shone on, you know, when Chris Carter first started it and his reasons for doing it. And I think it's more important than ever, really. So it's going to be really sad, Joe, if this is your final X-File, but I'm sure it'll be a fantastic way to go out, really.
No, thank you. I certainly I hope so. We'll see. I hope it's not my final. I hope it's not the final story, I'll be honest with you. However, I am pleased with this being an endpoint, at least for the time being. Again, I think it attempts to update the mission statement a little bit, is what we're trying to do. Whether or not that's something that's adhered to by anybody else ever is, you know, remains to be seen. But at least insofar as I'm able to articulate what it is I think the X-Files should do and be about, that's very much what Resistance is hopefully going to achieve.
That's great. Can't wait to read it. I'm sure it's going to be brilliant. One final question, Joe, for you today, which is a question I ask a lot of people when they come on the show, is tied into the X-Files, which is, do you believe in the paranormal?
Wow. I believe in the unexplained. I have a higher bar of skepticism to be met before I tell you that I believe in things like ghosts. I'm more open to believing that there's extraterrestrial life out there, because I'm of the mind that, there must be. If the universe is almost infinite and so vast, and we know that just looking up into the sky, we're looking in the direction of however many millions of stars, let alone if we turn our head to the left or right a few degrees, what we're actually looking up at. It's not very hard to imagine that there's something else out there, and we may yet find life of some variety or another within our own solar system. I mean, we're certainly undertaking the sort of missions to find it. So I'm open to that stuff, throwing out what science fiction has taught us to expect in terms of spaceships and intergalactic wars and whatever other tropes and concepts you can glean. As far as the supernatural goes, the paranormal, I don't know. I'm willing to extend a benefit of the doubt when it comes to some things, when it comes to human capability, like different sort of psychic ability that we study. And I'd like to say what I don't know, I'm open to being proven wrong about. But I'm also I'm a tough nut to crack. I don't just give myself to believing in things like ghosts. I think that mankind is filled with the capacity to do many horrific things, and that's enough to keep me up at night for real. I tend to look at the genres that I work in fiction, and in different media as entertainment first and foremost. So that's the gist of it. I'm reluctant to say yes, but I'll happily say maybe.
You're in between Mulder and Scully, let's say.
Yeah, maybe so.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you for coming on the show, Joe. It's been really delightful to speak to you and to talk about your comics and all your work and everything like that. So once again, huge thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, and thanks for being such a supporter all this time. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
So that was our exclusive chat with Joe Harris. A huge thanks to Joe for appearing on the X-Cast and talking about his work and his X-Files fandom. Hopefully, this won't be the last time we see Joe on the podcast, but until hopefully he returns to the show, you can find him in various different places across the internet. You can find him at his website, which is www.joeharris.net, which has all of his X-Files work links and features from some of his other work, including his brand new series Rockstars from Image Comics. You can also find him on Facebook and on Twitter at Joe Harris. So give him a follow over there to keep track of the kind of work he's been doing. You can find us, as usual, at the X_cast on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook at the XCast and our group, the XCast podcast fan group. Do come in and get involved. You can also find us on iTunes. Do leave us a like and a review. That'd be amazing to help us get better known amongst the X-Files fandom community. We will be back very soon with a brand new episode as we race towards the end of our Season 2 coverage. Next week, I'll be handing over the hosting reins for the first time for a main episode to Carl Sweeney, one of the excellent X-Cast team. So join him for our look at Season 2's legendary humbug coming very soon. But until then, as always, remember, trust no one. The X-Cast is produced and presented by Tony Black, part of the Black Hole Media podcast network. Title music is courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.